Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. 10 years to the week since the fall of Lehman Brothers, how a decade of financial crises changed the world. Tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Adam Tooze is the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Professor of History at Columbia University, an award-winning author, including the Longman History Today Prize, the Wolfson Prize, the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for History, formerly taught at Yale, one of our flagship stations, where he was Director of International Security Studies and also at the University of Cambridge. Worked in executive development with several major corporations and contributed to the National Intelligence Council. He's got an epic book just out, Crashed, How a Decade of Financial Crises Changed the World. Welcome, Professor.
Hi.
Monumentally ambitious book you put together. Did the 10th anniversary, is that what drove you to write this or what?
I don't think it was. I mean, obviously it's a convenient date to publish and the publicists love it. I'm not complaining, but... But I think I set out to write it actually with a more serious mission, which was to explain to either side of the Atlantic, to the Europeans and the Americans, how entangled they were in this crisis. That's really the key theme of this book. This is the 2008 crisis. We tend to think of it as issuing from American real estate and then going to the banks in Wall Street and then the failure of Lehman, AIG, all of that tangled American historical mess, which is real and very powerful. But what I wanted to show in the book is how this was interconnected with the drama on the other side of the Atlantic and how those two things together then spiraled towards the Eurozone crisis, which has been so damaging to the EU. And I started writing this book in 2012, 2013, when we really felt as though I think we'd got closure on the story. You know, the Wall Street crisis had really been stabilized by 2009. And by the summer of 2012, the fall of 2012, the Eurozone was stabilized by Mario Draghi's magic words, whatever it takes. Barack Obama was reelected in November 2012. So the crisis fighting team of 08, 09 was vindicated in office. And that's really the moment at which I thought it was a good idea to take stock, look back, and try and explain to both sides how entangled they'd been. Because already then, even before Trump, it was clear that, you know, the wires between Europe and America had gotten pretty crossed. People know really there was no real sense in the Atlantic sphere of how common this problem had been and what it had taken on both sides really to stabilize the crisis.
Adam, how close do you think we came to a complete global collapse of the economic system? I know in the book you quote Bernanke or someone trying to tell Congress is 24 hours, but what do you think?
It's very close. I mean, I was just on a radio program with the former British Treasury Secretary, Alistair Darling, and he was talking about information he had about RBS, which was at the time the biggest bank in the world, being hours away from failure. We came very close to the most severe financial crisis ever suffered by the global economy. I liken it to the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's that kind of an event. We really looked over the cliff, we saw the abyss, and we pulled back. But you're never really quite the same again after having that experience.
It's interesting. This Saturday will actually be the 10th anniversary of Lehman. collapsing. If Lehman had been bailed out, would things have been a lot different? And obviously, AIG might have, the cost of AIG might have been different.
Yes, I think it would have been different. But and I, you know, I'm an interventionist by nature. I think that bailing was the right thing to do. The consequences of not bailing were obviously catastrophic because it really sent a huge shockwave through global money markets. It's really that really matters because it triggers the equivalent of a global bank run. Banks will not lend money to each other anymore or to a business. That's really the heart attack stage of this crisis. But the question, of course, is what would have happened if they hadn't bailed Lehman? And if they hadn't bailed if they had bailed Lehman, you've got to wonder whether they really would have been willing to go the extra mile, right? Because it's that sense of an impending total disaster that really pushes them towards TARP. And TARP is the distinguishing difference between the United States and Europe. If you ask what is the thing that the Americans did right, which the Europeans failed to do, it is the comprehensive recapitalization of the American banking system that was pushed through by a repurposing, if you like, of TARP money on the 13th of October, 2008. All of the major bankers were in the room. Geithner, Paulson, Bernanke, Sheila Bair of the FDIC. And they leant across the table and said to the bankers, you are taking this money whether you like it or not. Yeah. And if you do not take the money, we're going to announce the following day that you're undercapitalized. You'll be back the day after. And the next time we offer you this money, it will not be such a sweet deal. So you take it now or else. And that is the moment, really, where the American banking system began to regain its footing. It wasn't a done deal by any means because Citigroup is still really on the ropes. Bank of America, you know, swallowed an absolute toad in buying up Merrill Lynch. But that is the moment when they begin to get ahead of the game, finally. And without Lehman, without that debacle, without that fiasco of really seeing how bad things could get if things, you know, if they didn't fail, I'm not sure whether we ever get to that moment of TARP and the comprehensive recapitalization.
Interesting. Do you attach a main cause? You obviously have the housing crash, the mortgage, the CDO, the securities crash. You have these opaque financial weapons of mass disruption, the credit default swaps, derivatives. You have moral hazard, too big to fail. Do you attach more to any one of those things?
I would add another further element to that, which is really the leverage in the banking system and the short-term funding model that they'd all adopted. All of the things that you started by describing are clearly really bad news. And if they had blown up by themselves, we would have had something like .com, 8 years earlier. We would have had huge losses to American investors. We would have had a recession. We would have had a fall in consumption, a fall in investment. To actually get to the real existing crisis of 08, you need something else. Those risks and those losses need to be on the balance sheets of banks, and that matters. Because banks are the inherently fragile link in the global financial system. Why? Because they manage maturity mismatch, they borrow short, and they lend long.
Tell me, that's something that has always amazed me, is relying on repos and overnight funding, commercial paper, and it's destroyed Drexel on all the way up to all these. So how can they be so dumb?
Well, it's just money. You make profit doing those kind of trades. It's a cheaper way of financing gigantic balance sheets.
And if the regulators
will let you do it, you think you can get away with it. And some of the collateral, after all, looked bomb-proof. So how could you ever be in a situation in which you couldn't repo a bunch of treasuries? It should surely be possible to do that.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, you know, both Bear Stearns and Lehman were shut out of the tri-party and bi-party repo market because people just didn't want to do repo trades with actors who looked like they might fail. So collateral, which looked as though you were always going to be able to finance it, suddenly turned out to be something you couldn't do anything with.
Okay, well, let's look at the maturity mismatch then. You had these complex, often illiquid instruments supported by this almost overnight funding. Wouldn't that have seemed obviously poor risk management?
Absolutely, but again, it's so profitable. And the Europeans are really big into this, right? So asset-backed commercial paper is really a European playground. Citigroup is, you know, the biggest single issuer, but the market as a whole is dominated by European banks, which hold their portfolios of subprime and various other types of securitized debt on the basis of three-month commercial paper. And that market stopped dead in August 2007 already when Paribas, the big French bank, announces that three of its U.S. real estate trust funds have to stop making payments. And from that moment onwards, really, ABCP, asset-backed commercial paper, is dead. In fact, you can date it even a few days earlier to the news from the German bank IKB, which was in that same market.
We have about a minute and a half to go. Talk about the scope of the bailout, which I hadn't realized. I mean, apparently the Fed extended $4.5 trillion credit to the euro and Asian banks that no one really even knew about. And the government commitments in the U.S., the guarantees, et cetera, reach 30% of our GDP.
Yeah, we should come back to this, but it's a huge story. Recapitalization is one side, liquidity is the other aspect of it.
And before we come back, we'll talk more if you'd like, the hit, and we'll talk about the linkage to politics, the rise of populism, Trump comes out of this, but the hit in real estate, stocks, IRAs crashing was $22 trillion at one point. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I mean, there are massive losses across the board and profound losses to large parts of American society, right? There are communities that are unlikely ever to recover from this. From the losses they suffered in their wealth portfolios as a result of the collapse in real estate.
One more thing in this segment, the conflict of interest, right? The rating agencies were putting AAA ratings on this junk stuff, but they were getting paid by the very folks that were doing the rating. And things like Goldman Sachs betting against their own CDOs by betting against them while they were selling them long to their customers.
No, absolutely. I mean, the ratings agencies are in an incredibly invidious position because they're dealing repeatedly. The thing is, they deal repeatedly over and over again over the same assets with the same issuers. And that's what really sets up the conflict of interest. Because they've been paid to, you know, rate all sorts of debt for ages. It's the fact that they're doing repeat business with the same actors that really generates the corruption, if you like, of the system.
Interesting. Listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network. 350 stations around the country. Go to BusinessTalkRadio.com. Find the station closest to you. Listen over the Internet. Access our podcast. We'll be right back with Professor Tews. Why did no one go to jail? The rise of populism, the Eurozone crisis.
Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies in a capsule. Thousands of doctors, health specialists, and professionals recommend Balance of Nature as a way of improving their health. Listen to a few unsolicited success stories from doctors that use Balance of Nature as well.
Scientific research has shown that many cancers and lifestyle diseases can be prevented with a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. This prevention comes from the phytochemicals in the plants. I take Balance of Nature because I know, I've seen it in my lab, and I know that it works. I've seen the immune response increase, I've seen your DNA repair capacity increase, and I've seen DNA protection. And that, to me, as a scientist, rings so true.
For a limited time, use discount code RADIO6 to receive a 50% discount on your first preferred whole health system and have it shipped to you free. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go online to balanceofnature.com. Again, use discount code RADIO6.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble. I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
As a small business owner, there's one word that you absolutely dread: payroll. For small businesses, it's a big burden. You may think you're saving time and money doing it yourself, but come on, are you? Timesheets, processing checks, calculating taxes, a total waste of your time. Paychex simplifies payroll processing, saving you time and money. Submit your payroll online, fax it in, or call your dedicated Paychex payroll specialist. And you're done! Learn more at TryPaychex.com. Come on, do the math. The IRS dishes out 8 million penalties a year. Make one mistake and you're on the hook. On average, you're losing nearly one business day every month doing payroll. That's time and money you'll never get back, unless you get Paychex. More than 500,000 small businesses already do. Call 877-649-5324. Trade payroll pressure for peace of mind. Call now. 877-649-5324. That's 877-649-5324.
Here's important new information from the Diabetes Solution Center for you, a family member, or a loved one suffering with diabetes. If you have lost your provider, or if you need a provider for diabetic supplies, you may qualify to receive your diabetic testing supplies now with little or no out-of-pocket cost, regardless of your age. All you need is Medicare or private insurance to be potentially eligible. Call the Diabetes Solution Center right now for details. Just takes a couple of minutes. Our friendly, knowledgeable agents will give you free, no-obligation information, handle all the insurance paperwork, and make sure your supplies are delivered directly to your door for free.
Call U.S. Medical Supply 24 hours a day. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. Call right now. 800-597-9323.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
Back with Columbia University economic historian Professor Adam Tooze. And we wanted to get that, again, a sense of the scope of the Fed bailout. And this is from a primarily a liquidity perspective. Go ahead, Adam.
Well, I think it's important to say this isn't a bailout. And any central banker you talk to will insist this was not a bailout. Bailouts are the nasty things you have to do in a financial crisis. That's when you take a capital, you make a capital investment in a bank, and you put the taxpayer at risk. And that is, as you like, the dirty side of the bailout. This is what they did with Bear Stearns. They ended up doing with AIG. It's what the Brits had to do with RBS. You know, that's really the highly political bit that everyone talked about. What central banks, however, have to do for all of the banks in the system is provide liquidity. Bailouts you do for the casualties. But in a situation like 2007-08, all the banks, whether they're well-run or badly-run, whether they've made losses or not, are suffering a liquidity crisis. Because bank liquidity is essentially a question of confidence, and confidence is shot through the, you know, the drumbeat of bad news. And so all around the world, banks are craving liquidity. The ECB starts pumping liquidity. That is, you take long-dated assets, illiquid assets, off the balance sheets of banks, and in a swap, you give them cash in exchange for that. Sometimes you trade back after a period. Sometimes it's a straight buyout. The ECB does this. The Bank of England does this. But the problem that becomes apparent by the end of 2007 is that as much euros or pounds as the European Central Bank can pump into their system, what their banks really need are dollars. And the only central bank that can provide dollars in liquidity is the Fed. And so from the end of 2007 onwards, Ben Bernanke repurposes these things called liquidity swap lines, which sit between central banks and provide the European central banks with all the dollars they need to provide dollars to their local banks in Europe. So first of all, you start providing liquidity to Deutsche Bank or Credit Suisse through its branch in Wall Street. About $500 trillion in liquidity is taken by all of the big banks,
wow.
JP Morgan as well, Citigroup and so on, in Wall Street. And then when they run out of good collateral in Wall Street, what the Fed does is to say, right, what we'll do is we'll lend dollars to the ECB in Frankfurt in exchange for euros. And then the ECB in Frankfurt can take your collateral there and we'll provide you with liquidity indirectly by that mechanism. And $4.5 trillion.
And nobody knew that, right?
Well, yes. Again, one has to be careful about this because the Fed is not trying to break the law.
Right.
Engage in any kind of subterfuge. No one ever likes to talk about liquidity programs because the whole thing about liquidity programs is it's banks facing a loss of confidence. So stigma is a disaster in a liquidity program. And you want the banks to take this liquidity so as to prevent anyone from becoming a real casualty. So central bankers always guard the secret of who has taken liquidity in a crisis in any circumstance.
Very fascinating. Now, what comes out of this, and you talk about basically the world was saved by this, but in the long run, it seems to have put a greater linkage to politics. And we've got populism, protectionism, polarization. We've got Trump and a lot of unhappy people. The TARP, for instance, was very successful for banks, but there was a program called HAMP, Home Affordable Modification Program for consumers, that never really got tapped to the degree that it should. I always thought it was because Geithner didn't want bank balance sheets beaten up anymore with write-offs. But what do you think about the did this end up with Trump?
Well, I mean, I think it certainly ends us up with the election of 2016. I wouldn't just say it ends up with Trump. It ends up with Bernie Sanders, too, right? So if you look at the Republican Party, really just go back to the summer of 2008. There's this extraordinary scene of the American housing system melting down, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, are basket cases. Now, no one's going to say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are the ideal way of financing a housing system. Mm-hmm. But that's one thing. Once you've got a housing system dependent on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to let them go up in smoke is just simply irresponsible. But you've got the Republican Party in Congress, which tells Paulson that he simply cannot count on their votes to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And he tells them, I'm going to reform it. I'm going to hurt the shareholders. This is going to be a radical intervention that we're making, and the Republicans simply won't buy it. The entire crisis fighting program from the summer of 2008 with a incumbent Republican president is in fact carried by the Democratic majority in Congress, which they've held since 2006. So the Republican Party's AWOL at this moment. And that, I think, is really a sign of things to come, and it opens the door to the kind of protest politics from the right that we've seen increasingly taking control of the GOP since 2008. It stops being a party that really conceives of itself as a party of government, responsibly balancing, if you like, the interests of a grand strategy, if you like, for the development of American politics and its economy against the emotional upheaval that its constituents, largely white conservative Americans, are undergoing. And it prioritizes really the expression of that emotion, that dissatisfaction, that distress in some cases, over the problem of governing. And you could argue that something similar happens to the Democrats, too. I would personally say that the response there is more constructive, but that's my personal preference. Mm-hmm. So structurally, you can see something very similar going on there, too, where there is a rebellion from the base against the leadership, which since the 90s, say, under Clinton and NAFTA would be emblematic of this, has committed the leadership of the party to a program of globalization, which it understands as being in the interests of the American economy, which it understands as being interests, of course, also of American business, and represses, if you like, and marginalizes the opposition, which was there in the Democratic Party, too, since the 1990s. Both the leaderships of both parties struggle to contain this, and we know that the Democrats retained control. Clinton is the candidate. And in the GOP, all hell breaks loose, and the elite of the party totally loses control of the primary process. And by the summer of 2016, we have a large number of establishment Republicans openly distancing themselves from their own candidate. Paulson, for instance, comes out and says that, you know, responsible Republicans ought to vote for Hillary Clinton. And he says so explicitly with reference to the experience of 2008. He says, can you imagine fighting that kind of financial crisis with Donald Trump as president? A little unfair to Donald Trump, actually, by the way, because Trump in 2008 was fully in favor of the bailouts, fully in favor of, of dramatic action by the Fed, and was in fact extremely complimentary of Barack Obama when he came in and was supportive of the stimulus. Now, Trump isn't anything but a pragmatic, unprincipled businessman who knows where profit can be made if it's necessary to make it. He's no ideologue when it comes to economic policy.
Do you think that the whole fact of quantitative easing and everything, the throwing massive liquidity out there, which benefited financial assets, but for folks that don't own, you know, that are on fixed income, for instance, they saw basically their net worth decline as well as wage, no real wage growth. Is that at the heart of this too?
I think there's a real dilemma here. And in fairness to the Fed, you know, quantitative easing, which is the strategy which produced this, you know, disparate development between different types of assets, was it's no one's idea of, like, the first priority of macroeconomic policy. The Fed was clamoring for fiscal policy to bear the burden and to be the main driver of the recovery. And QE, especially QE2 and QE3, are basically adopted in the absence of an adequate fiscal policy. So they are a second or third best in terms of policy instrument. And they do necessarily have this effect of boosting asset markets, though the econometricians argue about exactly how large the effect is. The belief was certainly there that it was having that effect. And that will, of course, it will benefit the 50% of Americans who actually own any equity. And, of course, within that group, the overwhelming majority of equity is held by the top 1%, basically. So, yes, it's a policy that will is structurally biased towards that group. And if you look at wealth inequality as opposed to income inequality in the United States since 2008, it has dramatically increased, at least on, I think, most the consensus on wealth inequality is that it, unlike income inequality, has in fact increased quite dramatically.
Fascinating. You say, for instance, Hispanics' medium wealth declined 86%, which is unbelievable.
Minority communities.
Minority wiped out, basically. Euro and global contagion next.
BizTalk Radio is now available on Amazon Echo. Just add the BizTalk Radio skills, then ask Alexa for the latest business news. You'll instantly get live, relevant information from the best business source, BizTalk Radio. Alexa, open BizTalk Market Tips.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-285-4765 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-285-4765. Again, 800-285-4765.
You love your car, and so does CarChecks. We're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau and have been helping people avoid spending a fortune in costly car repair bills for almost 20 years. For about $2.50 a day, you get the peace of mind in knowing that your expensive repair bills may be covered by a vehicle protection plan. Think about if your air conditioner or the transmission goes out. That could cost you a few thousand dollars. Or you can get protected with car checks and pay only a standard deductible. For about $2.50 a day, you can make sure you don't get stuck with the bill for covered repairs. Keep your car in tip-top shape. For a completely free quote, call Car Checks now at 800-958-5207. 800-958-5207. That's 800-958-5207. Or visit GetProtected.com. That's GetProtected.com.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home? And you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do.
If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-563-0393. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-563-0393. 800-563-0393. That's 800-563-0393.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
We're back with Adam Tooze. He's the author of Crashed, How a Decade of Financial Crises Changed the World. We're going to look outside of the U.S. now. In the Eurozone area, the recovery seems to have been so much slower. You highlighted that the Fed has the ultimate liquidity, role, and there's not as much unity in Europe. And you have a great chart in there, the growth of housing prices correlated to credit being extended, and Spain and Ireland are the worst, if you will, of that, and they ended up both countries almost crashing. Talk a little bit about why the Eurozone was so much slower and more difficult.
Well, I mean, I think it's right to say that the boom and the bust was worse. Bad as we think that the American, the excess in the real estate market was, as bad as we think the irrational exuberance was, it was even more irrational, even more exuberant in Ireland and Spain. And so those countries, and Spain is a big chunk, Spain is a Texas-sized chunk of the Eurozone economy. They were riding for a huge fall, and they did suffer the consequences. But one would have to say that thanks to the transatlantic liquidity provision of the Fed, thanks to the emergency measures taken by the Europeans, in 2009, you'd have a hard time separating Europe from the United States. They both went through a similar crisis. Mm-hmm. Are they both beginning to recover by the fall of 2009? And then something happens which divides the experience from that moment onwards. And it basically has to do with the management of one rather small piece of the puzzle, which is allowed to spiral out of control.
You're going to say Greece?
This is Greece.
Yeah.
And Greece, it's difficult to exaggerate how small Greece is. I mean, it is, about 1.5% of Eurozone GDP. It ought not to have been a big deal.
Yeah.
It has an unmanageably large sovereign debt problem. But it had that problem before it joined the Eurozone. This is not new news. Everyone knows that it is fragile, and it is pushed over the edge by the crisis, not by huge borrowing before the crisis, but by the fact that if Greece does a stimulus, it takes it from just about coping to absolutely being non-viable. And when the lack of confidence begins to build up, interest rates surge, then its position becomes less and less viable. And Greece spirals between 2008 and 2010 to a situation of basically urgently needing debt restructuring. And everyone can really see it needs debt restructuring. The question is how to make that debt restructuring safe. And this isn't sort of a utopian fantasy, because in the end, Greece's debt is restructured. It just takes 2 years to design the structures that will make it safe. And the worry is that if they just do an out-and-out restructuring straight away in the spring of 2010, it will be effectively, and this is what the U.S. Treasury said, it will be another Lehman. In other words, it will be a punitive decision to avoid the moral hazard problem, to impose losses where losses are due, both on Greece's credit and on the banks and the insurance funds which lent to Greece.
Interesting.
And there is a pervasive sense in Europe at that moment that they cannot risk that. And this is heavily reinforced by the U.S. Treasury, which uses the IMF as its vehicle for intervening in the Eurozone crisis and backstopping a really appalling lowest common denominator fix, what Yanis Varoufakis called extend and pretend, Greek finance minister.
Can you essentially have in a European currency, in an EU, a country like Greece and Germany trying to maintain basically the same kind of currency with completely different economics and debt problems?
Well, you can if you have a large enough common fiscal policy. You can if you have an accommodating monetary policy. You could even do it if you had, for instance, the another route to go. So one route will be the Keynesian route, build a state big enough to accommodate differences, and then use instance, a common unemployment insurance fund like the United States does to transfer resources between the different bits. That would be one solution. Another more minimal, more market-friendly solution would be to say, you know what, let's have a common market, but let's simply treat these debts differently. Let's simply say that Greece should pay a much higher interest rate because it has a much higher default risk. Let's have a sovereign default mechanism so that if Greece goes bust, it goes bust.
Interesting.
No hard feelings, it just goes bust. There are two different ways of doing this.
And you could do that with one currency?
Yes, you could do that with one currency. Why not? You absolutely can. America has no bailout provisions for its states as well, right?
Yep.
You can imagine cities going bust in the United States within the dollar currency zone.
Right.
You then, of course, need to ensure that that debt cannot be treated in the balance sheets of banks as being, you know, the same debt as German government debt. So you would need to extend this logic all the way down. So that's the hard market-driven side of this. Or you could go to the full Keynesian solution and say, actually, we basically have common liability here. We're going to share this. We'll have fiscal rules which prevent states from exceeding their credit limit. And then we'll have a fiscal policy that cushions. There's a lot of institutional imagination that could be deployed. The reason it isn't is, of course, politics. These kind of decisions are very hard to take. And Europe is in the early stages of building the kind of polity that would be necessary to make some of these trade-offs possible. But the crisis has forced the pace. Europe now does really have an interconnected polity, whether it likes it or not. Everyone cares about how they vote in their national election.
Well, so what you're saying actually might be good news for the long term in Europe, but how does Brexit fit in then?
Well, the question is, can we get to the long term?
Yes, okay.
You know, so the trend, as Keynes famously said, in the long run, we're all dead. The question really is, can we get there without the wheels coming off the bus? Now, Brexit's a different story because the United Kingdom is never part of the Eurozone. In some ways, Britain has the best of both worlds. It's a full member of the EU. It has full voting rights. It has access to the common market. It has freedom of movement for its citizens. It's not part of the Eurozone. Given the scale of the crisis in the UK, it comes through the crisis relatively better than one can imagine, especially when you factor in how dysfunctional macroeconomic policy was with the austerity that Britain chooses in 2010. It is not by any means a disaster in the United Kingdom. What you have to figure there are the profound and deep and long-standing hostility to Europe, which has been, again, cultivated by the political class and the media for years. This is not a natural, anti-European sentiment, but there are political entrepreneurs who keep it on the boil. And given the very nasty backdrop in Europe from 2010 onwards, given the reality that many Europeans are leaving the Eurozone to come and find work in the UK, it's very easy for political entrepreneurs to pick up on this and to, in a demagogic way, if you like, to mobilize opinion against the EU. In circumstances like that, to have a referendum, it's not surprising that you can get a very narrow vote in favor of leaving, given the underlying conditions in the UK.
Let me ask you about Russia for a second. Now, you have Putin growing the standard of living as the oil prices went up when he first came in, and now he's got the reverse situation. He gets a lot of dependency on selling oil to Europe. Yet at the same time, he's interfering in elections, Syria, Ukraine, Crimea, killing folks on foreign soil in Britain, for instance. How do you balance political stability and Putin acting as a bad guy?
I mean, I think we just have to recognize with Russia that our victory in the Cold War was not as complete as we'd like to think it was. There was a moment in the 1990s where the Soviet Union was collapsing.
Yeah.
Russia was a basket case. It ends up, appealing for food aid. In the late 1990s, it has a sovereign default on its own debt domestically. And Putin's regime is a determined effort to rebuild Russia as a geopolitical player. It does so on the back of globalization. Russia doesn't sell very much gas and oil to the United States, of course, but it does to China and it does to Europe. It benefits from the global boom. And from 2007 onwards, it announces that unless the United States and Europe is willing to take it seriously and treat it with respect and cooperate and recognize its red lines, and those red lines include Georgia and Ukraine, Russia will resist. And we simply don't take that warning seriously. Twice over. In Georgia, the Bush administration encouraged Ukraine and Georgia to make NATO membership applications, and the punishment in August 2008 is dramatic for Georgia. And the financial crisis substantially weakens Ukraine, puts it in harm's way, And when the Europeans in 2013 heedlessly push towards an association agreement with the Ukraine, again, Putin couldn't hardly have been clearer. You know, this is incompatible with his vision for Ukraine's future. And you may say, well, Ukraine's a sovereign state. Why should they listen to Putin? Well, Putin will tell you why. He has the capacity to do you harm. So if you're going to engage in a Ukraine policy that ties it to the West, you better be willing to back Ukraine, if necessary, with force. And of course, there's absolutely no appetite for that in either Europe or the United States. And so if you're in that kind of asymmetric situation where you have somebody who's playing hardball, then, you know, there's a degree of irresponsibility in Western policy towards this entire zone, which, you know, insists that it's unpleasant for Putin to be playing hardball, that we wish he wasn't, that he's infringing on other people's rights. All of this is true, but it doesn't matter, given his ability to act and the fact that his oil and gas-based power base is real.
Boy, it's fascinating to me because, to me, he's an economy like the size of Greece, and he's got a...
Spain, no. The size of Spain.
Size of Spain.
Not the size of Greece.
That's, you know, I don't see Spain as a world power, but...
Well, imagine Texas. That helps. That pushes you in the direction. Texas with nuclear weapons would be a player.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We'll have our final segment coming right up.
Attention investors, respected names in the financial services industry are not evaluating if there will be a significant market downturn, but when. Higher interest rates and prospects of a trade war suggest the stock market is headed into a perilous direction. Subprime mortgages, which are back, could potentially devastate the real estate market, as they did before. And with stocks simply overdue for a fall after this second longest bull run in history, even bullish analysts are recognizing these indicators that equities are in big trouble and have projected stock market losses up to 40%. You can protect your IRA or 401k for maximum safety and opportunity with physical gold and silver, as they are assets that remain genuine stores of value no matter what's happening in the marketplace. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806 to get your free guide to precious metals investing. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Time changes everything. For me, becoming a single father of two young kids, it changed my ability to use my timeshare. The frustration of not being able to use it was compounded by annual maintenance fees that nearly tripled over a three-year period. I was desperate to get out. After searching online for sell my timeshare or get out of my timeshare, it just looked like one scam after another. I needed a real, permanent, and legitimate way to get out of this for good. I'm Brandon Reed, the founder of Timeshare Exit Team. We will get you out of the timeshare you can't use or can't afford anymore. We get people out safely, legally, and permanently. We are more successful because we have more solutions. Schedule a free consultation to review your ownership situation and find the best strategy for you. If we can't get you out, we will give you a full refund. Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
Call 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112.
Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk, online at biztalkradio.com.
Economic historian Adam Tooze is looking back at the financial crisis 10 years later. And first off, I got to ask, can it happen again? Has moral hazard too big to fail? Can it happen again?
Well, I think it's important to recognize just how uniquely awful 2008 was. So this question of whether it could happen again shouldn't be posed in the manner of the business cycle question. Is America due for a recession in the next year or two? Mm-hmm. I think most people would agree that it was. It would be true to historic form. 2008 is a historically unique event. So we would have to be saying that we saw a similar configuration of risks in the global economy at this moment. And I don't think we see anything quite like that conjunction on both sides of the Atlantic that we saw in 2008, because that's what made 2008 the kind of crisis that it was, the fact that it wasn't just the American banks and all of them, but the European banks and some of the Asian and Russian banks as well. That kind of interconnected, I think, dimension of risk is not in the global economy at this moment. Where you could imagine it developing would be in the emerging markets, and the crucial place really to look is China. China is the one place in the global economy right now which is growing fast enough, and where the growth is so clearly driven by a credit bubble.
Yes.
And where we also have ramshackle structures of shadow financing, off-balance sheet banking. And we're in a world now in which China is a huge piece of global growth and is interconnected in both ways with the West, both in the sense that China owns American debt, but also significantly in the sense that Chinese corporates are heavily indebted in dollars. So there we really have, I think, the makings, not in the short term, but in the medium to longer term, of something that could be not the repetition of 2008, but potentially something even more difficult to handle.
Is it almost like a mutual assured destruction, China-U.S., in that the China can't afford, because they have so much of our debt, to suddenly go to war on that side and stop funding us? On the other hand, do you see a big threat of these tariff wars coming?
Well, I think I would separate trade out. What I like about the mutually assured destruction, or what Larry Summers called the balance of financial terror, mm-hmm. is not so much that it's an exact equivalent to the Cold War, but the kind of risks that we think about when we think about the Cold War are the sort of risks we ought to be thinking about. I mean, if there were to be a Sino-American, Chinese-American financial meltdown, it kind of would be the end of the global economy as we know it. I think trade comes in not as a direct causal agent, right? Any more than, say, Smoot-Hawley was responsible for the Great Depression. I mean, Smoot-Hawley is, you know, accelerates and makes worse the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only really in conjunction with huge instability in exchange rates and a commodity price collapse that Smoot-Hawley really does the damage that it does. Likewise with foreign trade and the current talk of a tariff war between China and America and the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sino-American trade, big as it bulks in our kind of imagination, is a pretty small piece of the global economy. China does most of its trade with other the rest of the world and, with importantly, with its Asian neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
China is an important piece of U.S. trade, but Mexico and Canada are even bigger and more important. So it's really bad news, I would say, above all from a political point of view, because what it points towards is that relations between the United States and China are deteriorating,
mm-hmm.
and they are spiraling in a direction in which the economy is being, if you like, weaponized. It's being increasingly thought of not as a functional or technical interdependence, let alone a kind of positive sum vision of a global growth engine in which mm-hmm. the United States and China are two big pumps on global demand and drive the pace of global growth.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, the security policy people are taking over this arena. Now, I'm not saying that they necessarily have got the wrong end, the wrong idea here. I mean, the Chinese regime is a formidable dictatorship with a formidable repressive capacity, which is, has got a growing military capacity. So I'm not saying that raising this question about China as a security threat is necessarily the wrong thing to be doing. But I do think we really need to be thinking hard about how that relates to what now is a level of economic interdependence far deeper than anything we saw in the Cold War. Now, talking about China as a new Cold War is all very well until you realize how deeply interconnected we are with the Chinese economy. There was nothing like that during the actual Cold War with the Soviet Union, right? There was virtually no trade between the United States and the Soviet Union. There was no equivalent of Apple making all its iPhones in China or GM selling more cars in China than it sells in the United States. So that, for me, is a really alarming thing, that by way of the trade war, economic policy and security policy are becoming entangled in a way that it just doesn't appear to have been thought through in any kind of coherent way.
Wow.
And that, I think, is the real worry.
Let me ask you this. You know, we have this Federal Reserve that's been very effective, saved us, if you will. China has this debt bubble, and it's ideologically driven. Do they have a fiscal discipline central bank kind of thing that would help them get out of any crisis?
I mean, I think this is one reason for optimism, is that the Chinese technocrats are just about as good a bunch of technocrats as we've seen any time in, you know, recent decades.
Oh, okay.
They have learned the lessons of 08. They are actively working to try and deflate their shadow banking system. And they have much less inhibition about doing it because this is still effectively a Communist Party-run regime.
Yes.
They've, of course, built a private sector now and allowed it to flourish. But when the going gets rough, they do not hesitate to intervene. And they have been very actively putting the screws and the dampeners on the shadow banking economy. Now, the shadow banking economy is by definition difficult to regulate because it's unregulated and outside the boundary. The stuff lurking outside the purview of what Chinese regulators are able to get at. But no, there's every reason to think that they have the managerial capacity or at least the willingness to try and manage this. We saw, after all, in 2015, 2016, we've already had a kind of dry run of what happened, right? The Shanghai stock market was collapsing, the yuan was depreciating, and we've already done a run through, and they did three things, right? They held their nerve and allowed yuan to drain out, so they allowed their reserves to run down. They tightened regulation. But critically, and this is the third factor, they could count on Fed cooperation. Janet Yellen put off in September 2015 the taper so as to give the Chinese some breathing room. That, for me, is really the question going forward. Can we imagine the current environment as the political envelope for cooperative policy on the part of the U.S. Fed in relation to the Chinese crisis management strategy? That's really, I think, the big, big question for the future.
All right, we just have a few seconds left. We're rolling back Dodd-Frank, things like that. Have we learned anything, or are we just going to get ourselves back in trouble?
Well, what we're seeing there is just pure interest group politics. This is lobbying at work. The Treasury has opened the door and Mnuchin to quite unscrupulous, I think, efforts by interest groups in a very short-sighted way to just retrench those regulations. That was always a risk with Dodd-Frank. It was a very discretion-based mechanism up to the regulators, basically, and they're using it for all it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same old story, I think, there of interest group politics being played out behind the scenes, below the radar. They won't repeal Dodd-Frank, because that'll be difficult to do, but they will gut it.
All right, last word. Are you, after we've gone through all this very, very factual, analytically based, are you optimistic?
Well, I think we haven't got much option but to be optimistic. This entire system doesn't run itself. It's got to be managed.
Great. Thanks to Adam Tooze. It's a brilliant book, as you've heard his analysis over the last hour, Crashed, How a Decade of Financial Crises Changed the World. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Professor Tooze. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.